Just a scant few months later, in June 1972, Gacy marries Carol Hoff, this woman here. She was newly divorced, a mother of two daughters. Gacy romanced her when she was at her most vulnerable, and she fell for his charm and his generosity. Shock, shock, horror, horror. Once again, John Wayne Gacy's adept social skills serve him again. And once again, you've got to keep in mind, this woman has no idea that he's less than a year out of prison.
Right. She doesn't know his past. Like I said, this information wasn't publicly available. That was back when you wanted to reach somebody. It's like you called their house, and if they weren't there, it's like, well, they're not there.
He did eventually tell her about his time in prison, and she believed that he'd changed.
Right. So he was good at putting on the I mean, like, that's another thing, is he was super into religion,
but,
too.
But he was also smart, because he already developed a relationship with her. They're deeply involved, right. And it's like, oh, look, I'm a reform. And then she knows him as a good person. It's like, yeah, I believe you. Because obviously she has every incentive to believe him at that point.
So she moves her daughters in with him, and they're all living one big happy family. See, his first wife took his children. But now he's got two more. Now he's got two daughters.
He's got some replacement
kids.
Some
adopted daughters.
Replacement family.
Replacement wife and a replacement house.
And I mean, it's obvious that's what he wants.
So he pretty much
instantly that replacement family. He probably actually went
out looking for something like this. So everything that he had before he entered prison, within short order, he just had it all back.
Right.
Because he just made that happen for himself.
And he just happened to live right next door to one of the oldest and most connected socially families in the neighborhood. The Grexes were his next door neighbors, and he immediately set about being the best neighbor ever. And eventually, you know, I mean, he was, before he married Carol, he was being invited to their house for Christmas and shit.
Wow.
So, I mean, he was like juiced in with the community.
I mean, they fucking loved it. I'm like, if someone invites you for Christmas, like that's like your close fucking friends and family.
Exactly. Yeah. They all, you know, he's already juiced in with the community, and him getting a wife and having two little girls living in the house with him lends a tenuous sense of normalcy to his life that allows him to go about reestablishing all of his old social connections.
And credibility. He's like he's well known through the community. He's fucking has a family. It's like he seems like an upstanding person.
He starts doing these elaborate cookouts, and it's at these very cookouts that he starts to get all of these connections that he makes, not only with people in the community, but with youngsters in the community. And that becomes a business for him in the not too distant future. The Grexes talk about his time at these cookouts. He was just really great at it. He was a wonderful host. He used to do themed parties where people would dress up. So we'd have, like, you know, 1776 themed, where we all wear powdered wigs, or I guess this one here was, like, I don't know what it was, Peter Pan themed, maybe?
I don't know.
But this is him at one of his famed cookouts, obviously a themed night. Maybe it was disco night. Yeah, I bet that's what it was. That's what it looks like.
Looks pretty disco-y.
Yeah.
It's got the big collar.
And he's carving up a big old roast there. But the Grexes after, you know, of course, John was caught, recalled that they were often bothered by the horrible stench that wafted through his house. Lily Grexa was convinced that some kind of animal had died beneath the floorboards, and she kept urging Gacy to do something about it. He blamed the odor on moisture buildup in the crawl space in the house.
Yeah, sure.
But, of course, there was a different reason that it was stinking.
Entirely, of course.
He hosted these annual summer parties. He got involved with the local Democratic Party. He offered the services of his new construction company, which he set up, and basically started doing these cookouts. And it's during these times that he starts dressing up as Pogo the Clown. And a lot of people, this is the only thing they know about Gacy. Right?
Yeah. The clown killer.
He's the dude that was a clown, and he killed people.
I think a lot of people think that, like, he was just, like, that was his main job, is he was a clown.
Or that he killed people while dressed as a clown. Now, there is an eerie kind of truth to that, but we'll get into that.
Cool.
He never did kill anybody in full clown garb or use the clown to, you know, kill anybody, I don't think. But we'll talk a little bit about the connection, but Pogo was very important to John, and I think, you know, we're not going to spend the whole time talking about it, because like I said, it's a very small part of his mythology that got seized on because of its obvious creepiness. I pulled several Pogo pictures, and all of them make you want to run the opposite direction. You know, you wonder how the neighbors...
Hiya, kids!
Hey! You wonder how the neighbors were ever anything but put off by
this. Don't
you
want a balloon?
But you have to think, you know, you have to take yourself out of your visceral reaction to this. Everybody's seen this picture of John Wayne Gacy.
Right. And we all know it's John Wayne Gacy at this point.
So we have an immediate gut reaction to it. But
well, of course, we have the benefit of hindsight and knowing his actions and what kind of person he was. I mean, of course, like to them, it lends that air of creepiness. But in his life, it was probably just like, hey, I'm a clown. Everyone's like, oh, it's our weird neighbor who's a clown. You know, they probably just thought it was charming or kind of a little quirky. You know what I mean?
Yep. So people actually loved it. They loved this little clown character. He would do it at, like I said, charitable events. He'd be requested to do it at parties. He'd do
so
it at
his own
party.
People in the community actually really loved this routine he had.
Yep. So he was a member of a ton of clubs. He was appointed the director of Chicago's annual Polish Constitution Day parade. He met First Lady Rosalind Carter, somehow scammed his way into that. He was also a member of the local Moose Club, where he became aware of the Jolly Joker Clown Club. So, you know, he was just like, any time that he could join some kind of club in his spare time to fill his time with a way to meet more people,
yeah, his
and
time
get more
was,
contacts.
His time was basically social climbing and connection building. Like he was just basically someone that would just network with people the old-fashioned way. You know,
but
what
it was
I mean?
At
like,
that Jolly Joker's Club that he actually created Pogo and Patches the Clown. I couldn't find any pictures of him dressed up as Patches, but apparently there was a second clown persona that he would do from time to time. Pogo is the one that I think he felt most connected to. And he designed his own costume, did his own makeup, and learned and performed at numerous local parties, charitable events, children's hospitals, learned a bunch of tricks, became kind of a clown. He joined this clown club and learned how to be a clown, and it ended up helping him because he was, you know, known in the community. Once again, it's another way to get his name in other people's mouths. Oh, that's a nice old dude that dressed up like a clown and works with the kids at the hospital. That's great.
He does. He makes the sick kids laugh.
In 74, he started a contracting business called Painting, Decorating, and Maintenance, or PDM Contractors. I think I have a business card of his in the images. You know what? I did want us to take some time, because we're not going to come back to it, to talk a little bit about Pogo, because Pogo was important to John, and it's kind of out of sync to talk about it now, but I don't want it to just linger on and on.
Yeah.
Once John was... you know, caught, convicted, and put on death row. He started doing this artwork. A lot of people have seen this stuff. Not all of the artwork that he did featured Pogo, but a lot of it did prominently. And
so this is stuff he's painting in prison.
Yes.
Like, he's still pining for the days of Pogo.
His fucking Pogo Seven Doors Funeral.
Right. There's a non-Pogo.
There's like dicks and pussies everywhere in the skull. I'm Pogo the Clown. Yeah, he really loved Pogo, dude.
And you see, he draws himself there with Pogo as a very sympathetic-looking clown.
Yeah.
A very, you know, I don't know. If I try and remove the Gacy element from this, this is not an immediately unsettling picture. You can see he didn't see Pogo as something evil or bad.
Who's he with here?
I don't know. Probably one of the people that would come and
visit him.
Well,
here's an evil Pogo.
Yeah, that is the evil Pogo there.
That's the inner Pogo.
Yeah.
It's very very blatant symbolism going on. But Pogo, you clearly see in his mind, Pogo is good.
Right.
Here's just another random clown, not Pogo, but a clown, because he loves clowns. Pennywise?
Yeah.
Damn. He's like, all right, an evil clown.
I don't know how Gacy saw that movie in prison, but apparently they showed it in prison.
Yeah,
maybe.
He must have.
I mean, it's on TV. They have TV.
So, yeah.
They had access to TV, a lot of them. This actually looks a little bit less amateurish than some of his other art. It's still not like...
It's a self-portrait.
Great, but...
And that's G.G. Allen in his coffin, yeah.
I didn't know he was a G.G. Allen fan.
Well, now you know. Yeah, Gacy loved G.G. Allen. saw him as a kindred spirit. And G.G. actually corresponded with Gacy.
That doesn't surprise me at all.
And they mostly just like sick, twisted fantasies about raping and murdering young teenage people.
Oh, there you go. I'm glad they got into that.
Yep.
So here's painting, decorating, maintenance, John Gacy.
So that's his business card.
You can call them at 457-1614 in Norwood Park, Illinois.
Poor person that has that number.
Give him a call.
He hired a number of teenage boys to work for him.
Shocking.
Exactly.
Shocking.
Explaining to his friends that hiring young men would keep his payroll costs low.
I'm sure it has nothing to do with your prior conviction for sodomizing.
Well, nobody knew about it.
Yeah.
Gacy's desires were starting to get out of control, and he was having trouble hiding his true nature from those closest to him, especially his wife. By 75, so not long after they got married, Carol and Gacy had drifted apart. Their sex life had ended, and Gacy's moods became more and more unpredictable, ranging from jovial to this uncontrollable rage that would have him throwing furniture. He'd become an insomniac, and his lack of sleep seemed to make his mood swings even worse. And if his personality changes were not enough, his choice of reading material worried her even more. Carol had started to find magazines with naked men and naked boys in them around the house, and when confronted, Gacy just kind of casually admitted that they were his. He even confessed that he preferred young men to women. Naturally, this was the last straw for Carol, who soon filed for divorce, and that divorce became final on March 2nd, 1976.
It's shocking that he couldn't keep that together.
So, not a shocking...
Eventually, his real person, like you said, you know, he's constantly under the temptation of being around young boys, and he's obviously just getting more and more into it and just giving less and less of a shit about his current relationship. Because, you know, obviously, the value he was driving at was social value. He didn't really care about her. It was kind of, like you said, even at a point, it's like, towards the end, it's just like, you know what?
Prop.
Yeah.
She was a prop. She didn't really, his sociopathy shows in his response, because most people would feel a deep sense of regret or shame, even though not necessarily being gay is something to be ashamed of.
No, not that.
But hiding it from their wife, you know what I mean? But he didn't care. He just kind of was like, yeah, those are mine, and I like boys more than girls, and I'm not going to fuck you anymore. And she was like, okay, well, fuck you, I'm out. She took her daughters and left Gacy alone in that house again, but he had established himself in the community in such a way.
So it's like, he's like, I don't need that anymore.
Right.
I'm where I need to be.
She was a prop, and he got what he needed out of her, and he knew at this point, having had two wives now figure out what he was and leave him for it, that she was replaceable. You know, at some point, some other woman's going to come across, and I'll be able to snatch her up. You know, whatever. She's just a prop in his life. And when she left, he was actually kind of happy about it.
Well, yeah, because now he's free to.
And divorce was still kind of taboo, especially in the upper crusty, richy kind of people that he moved amongst. But his social status allowed him to just kind of sidestep that. In the 70s, divorce was becoming all too common. And John was able to just kind of be the happy guy that just had a bad marriage that went south. You know, what are you going to do? So he maintained most of his social status. Until, once again, rumors started to swirl about John Gacy in the community. It's a story that, if you've been watching up until this point, should be all too familiar. Here's the story. He volunteered himself and his teenage boy employees to clean up and repair Democratic Party headquarters in Chicago. That's a big deal. That's a power play right there.
Right.
Chicago party politics in a big Democratic city, you know?
Yes.
Unaware of the contractor's past and impressed by his sense of duty and dedication to the community, committee chair Matwick nominated Gacy to the Street Lighting Commission. In 1975, Gacy became the secretary treasurer, but his political career was short-lived. No matter how he thought he was hiding it, rumors once again began to circulate about Gacy and particularly his interest in young men. One of the rumors stemmed from an actual incident that took place during the time that Gacy was working on the Democratic headquarters on the cleanup job. One of the teenagers who worked on the project, 16-year-old Tony Antonucci, According to the boy, Gacy made sexual advances towards him, but backed off when Antonucci threatened to hit him with a chair. Gacy recovered his composure and made a joke out of it. Several weeks later, while visiting Gacy's home, which after he did that, I don't know why you'd go over
yeah,
his pad.
I don't know. It was a joke, man. I didn't mean to.
Just kidding.
My hand slipped.
Just making sure you ain't some kind of queer.
Gacy again approached Antonucci. He tricked the young man into a pair of handcuffs
and then
tried to undress him. Antonucci.
How do you trick someone into a pair of handcuffs?
Well, that's an interesting question. Pogo. The way that he would do it was he would put them on himself and escape them and be like, how fast do you think I can escape out of these handcuffs?
Yeah.
And he'd do it real quick because he palmed the key. It's an old magic trick, right?
Yeah.
Easy sleight of hand shit. And then he'd go, how fast do you think you can do it? I don't know, man. Why don't you try it? Just give it a shot. Just see if you can do it. You know what I mean? He used that. It's a pogo trick.
Okay.
So that's how he tricked him into
the
handcuffs.
So he did use some of his clown knowledge.
Look,
yep.
I got right out.
How quick do you think you could do that? It's a crazy trick, huh? I'll show you how to do it if you can get out in 10 minutes, you know, or whatever the fuck.
Yeah.
So he tricks the man into the handcuffs. Antonucci, though, was smart, I guess, and he made sure that he was loosely cuffed. So I guess he balled up his fist or something and made some room in the cuff, and he was able to slip free out of the cuffs. He then wrestled Gacy and put the fucking cuffs on him. Oh, shit. Sorry. He wrestled Gacy, managed to subdue him, and took the cuffs off and put them on him.
So Gacy's kind of a weakling then.
Well, he had that heart condition. Remember, he was not... He was a big... He cut a big imposing figure. The big stocky dude. But at the end of the day...
Yeah, he doesn't have the ability to actually be that tough guy. So it's like a lot of his stuff is just manipulation. Like
he has to
use the fucking his brain and his cunning, which actually makes him more deadly because he's not relying on just brute force. He's relying on, you know, maneuvering people into the right position and at the right time doing what he needs to do.
And while all this is going on, he's killing people left and right, I'm sure.
Not yet.
No? Okay.
He eventually let this kid go when Gacy promised not to bother him again. So Gacy, you know, able to snake his way out of a really bad situation.
I'll never tell, please. Right. Let me. Yeah. And I mean, that guy's probably embarrassed, too, that even happened to begin with. So it's like, yeah, let's just forget about each other and just go on with our lives.
Tony Antonucci actually continued working his position for
wow.
John for over a year, and he had no idea how lucky he was.